Merry Christmas, everybody. This is the Tasteless Podcast Christmas episode. Happy holidays. I'm sure some of you are commuting now to go see family, traveling, maybe to go on a holiday vacation. Maybe you're staying at home and hanging out, staying warm, I hope, if it's winter where you are. This is an episode I did with my producer, actually, Ryan. I think most of you who follow StarCraft know him better as State, the Protoss player from StarCraft 2. That's right. State is my producer. He's been working with me on the podcast for some time. We did not have a lot of guests in December. Basically, everybody's off. It's off season for all these games. So we thought we might as well sit down and chat. We talk about his history as a professional gamer, what it's like to be on a pro gaming team, the value of being on a team or not being on a team. This is a really cool episode. It's one of our longer ones. We also, as usual, have a bonus episode for Patreon supporters. If you join us on Patreon, you're going to get exclusive content for a small donation. If you guys do have the money and throw that our way, it makes a huge difference. We're getting close to transitioning now into video episodes, which is going to cost a little bit more to make. So if you want to throw some money our way, it's really appreciated. That's patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. I know that because it's off season for pretty much all esports, if you would be willing to share this anywhere that you can, give us a good review, like the episode, post it on Reddit, StarCraft if you can. I want as many people to hear this as possible as we're going to continue on with this. We also have a little Christmas gift for you guys. We're giving away one of our after shows for free. It's the after show I recorded with Nathanius during the WCS pre-week. For you guys who are unsure whether or not you can or you want to support us on Patreon, now's your chance to get a little taste of that and make up your mind. There's nothing else going on right now esports-wise. It's the off-season. I've just been hanging out playing StarCraft, chilling with my cats, cooking some food at home. I've got the Christmas tree up. No presents under there yet. I got to do a little bit of shopping still. I'm always late on that. that's all I have to say. Without further ado, this is the Tasteless Podcast Christmas episode with State, or as you guys may have heard him already, Ryan. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little tired, a little sleep deprived, but
yeah, you're on a weird sleep cycle, right?
Yeah.
when are you waking up and when are you going to sleep?
Well, it's been a little on and off for the past couple of weeks. I think like most people that are gamers can probably relate where it's like you usually stay up late and then you want to sleep for a long time because you stayed up for a long time.
Yeah, this is me. I'm hardwired to not go to sleep.
Yeah.
I can stay in front of my computer forever.
My circadian rhythm is like 25 or 26 hours as opposed to 24. Yeah. So like if I don't stick to a schedule, I'll just go to sleep later and later and later.
So when did you go to sleep last night?
I want to say it was 7
or this morning.
I want to say it was 7 a.m.
7 a.m.?
Yeah, dude.
It is. I'm checking my phone right now. It is 2:20 p.m. So did you just wake up and come over here?
I woke up at 11, so I got like 3 or 4 hours of sleep. And I just up and came over here.
Damn. What are you going to do when we're done with this, man?
I'm going to try and stay awake until like
Yeah, you should try to power
PM.
Through it.
Well, the thing is, I did that. I powered through it like 2 or 3 days ago, and I went to bed at 9 p.m., and I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I'm fucking cured. And then I slept like 5 hours. I woke up at 5 a.m. and I fucking
And
just,
you felt great and you just got out of bed?
Yeah, and I just fucked my sleep schedule up all over again.
So, oh, my God.
We'll
I have a problem just because my job alone. This is so cute. Look at what the cat's doing. I don't know if it's going to pick up on the mics. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, it's picking up a lot.
Yeah, the cat is actually pawing the desk by the mics. For
I've
some reason,
seen him do
so
this
I got
before.
My whole house is covered with little ropes that the cats can use their claws on, but he's never figured that out, so he does it on the desk instead. Anyways, so yeah, for me as a caster, my work is always at night, so there's no penalty for sleeping in. So
yeah.
I've had periods where my sleep cycle is like super fucked.
Yeah,
where I'm waking up at like 3:30 or 4 p.m. Because I just also find I can't go to sleep after a broadcast. I find that I'm too hyped up. I know that's true for a lot of the other casters out here. It's not true for Dan. He's like one of those dolls where you lie him on the back and the eyes close. He just goes home and goes to bed.
God, that sounds like a fucking superpower.
I don't know how people do it.
Getting to sleep.
Do you use a, what's it called? The nightlight on your PC?
No, I have it on my phone. I tried doing it on my PC, but the colors fuck with me too much.
Oh,
I don't know what it is. No, I just it bothers me so much.
So I now turn the nightlight on, and then I just watch like a documentary or something on Netflix.
Yeah. I find that like if I put on a show and I lay in bed and I try to fall asleep, eventually I'll get to a point where it's like I gotta fucking turn the show off because it's too distracting from trying to sleep. And then usually I'm good. It's just, I think it's because I've been taking so much melatonin lately and I stopped.
Oh.
So now my body's just like it fucking needs it.
So you're in like a melatonin withdrawal. I take melatonin a decent amount, actually. Yeah. That stuff is rough. Actually, dude, I got these things here. If you want to borrow them, they're, I can't remember what they're called, but you... I bought it a couple of years ago. It looks like an iPod or something with a headset, but you stick it in your ears, and what it does is it puts light inside your ears.
What?
Because it's supposed to be similar to sunlight.
Okay. What the fuck?
Yeah, and I use this when I travel. Like,
it works for you?
Well, sunlight is what tricks your body into thinking you're awake. And so if you're in front of your computer screen or you're looking at your phone before you go to bed, the blue light is your brain thinking that it's daytime, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that there's no reason to fall asleep.
Right.
And supposedly, the inside of the ears are very sensitive to this. Because if you're really in bright sunlight, you're getting light inside of your ears.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on one second.
So they're like these little...
Yeah, it's a JBL.
They're like AirPods, but they're flashlights. What the fuck?
You can borrow while I'm on my trip, man. If you want to try.
So these wake you up. That's what they do.
Yeah, you only want to leave them in for about 15 minutes. I've only used it a couple times. I actually kind of forget I have it. But
yeah,
you can try it. Because right now the weather's pretty shitty, right? Like it's daytime right now, but it's cloudy and miserable outside because it's winter.
Oh, yeah. And the fucking pollution is so bad today. The air is just like...
Yeah, there was a warning today. We have what's called... Is it fine dust today or yellow dust? I actually don't know.
I have no idea what the distinction is.
There's two different types that come in.
I think fine dust is like... I think it's just like the pollution that comes from like cars and shit. And yellow dust is like the fucking Mongolian desert sand that blows in.
And then it catches the pollution.
Yeah, it gathers all the pollutants from fucking China.
Yeah. We have a lot of, not a lot, but there's definitely days in Seoul where it's not a good idea to go outside. And that's one of those days. It's kind of sad. It's been getting worse here in the last couple of years as pollution's getting worse. But anyways, try that thing out.
I'll try it out.
Like you can, when you wake up, put it in your ears. If you're trying to force yourself to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I can't do very well. I have a really hard time forcing myself to get out of bed.
Yeah, I think I'm okay in that regard. It's just fucking getting to sleep. I can't do it.
Damn, man. What have you been up to lately?
Not too much. I've been playing a lot of Warcraft 3 Reforged.
Really?
I'm in the beta. I've been enjoying that. Before I played StarCraft 2, I was originally a Warcraft 3 guy. But I didn't, like, compete or anything. I just did, like, UMS. Like,
so how
games.
Old were you when you first played Warcraft 3?
How old was I?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. The game came out in, I think, Reign of Chaos was 2002 and Frozen Throne was 2003, if I'm remembering correctly. So I was 10, 11. So
oh,
I've been playing that game for most of my life.
That must have been the same age I was when I played Warcraft 2.
Yeah.
I
tried playing Warcraft 2. I think this is actually one of the reasons that, like, really got me into gaming was... We had a PC at my home, and I have an older brother.
Yeah.
And he would always play Warcraft 2 with our friend down the street. I don't remember how it works. Like, they, like, direct, like, 2IP kind of thing. Like, how multiplayer was back then.
Oh, yeah.
But he would do, like, these multiplayer games with, like, his friend across the street, and, like, he would never let me play. I always wanted to play Warcraft 2. He wouldn't let me on the computer. I could never play. So I would just sit in the back, and I would watch my brother fucking play Warcraft 2. And I hated it because I never got to play it. It looks so cool. There's like fucking orcs and grunts and like these ogres and shit. You can build towers.
You're
a king.
Come to think of it, because I saw Warcraft 3 because Warcraft 2, excuse me, because of my friend's older brother who would also not let us play because he was on the computer the whole time. But we were allowed to watch.
Yeah, it's the same with me.
And then I did something similar to my brother where I didn't let him play a lot of times because he was younger than me.
Uh-huh.
So then I was forced to watch a lot of the times, and then we ended up getting in fights over the PC. And eventually there had to be a second computer that was bought. And then you got into Warcraft 3, but that was UMS, you said? Use map settings?
Yeah, like I did a little bit of ladder, but like I I was a shitter. Like, I was like 10 yeah. or 11 years old, you know? Like, I just like did it for the portraits. Like, I liked like the rifleman and that kind of thing. Because back in Warcraft 3 in the chat rooms, like if you had a portrait, you were so cool.
That's right. Yeah. That's when they put that feature in.
Yeah. Like, I cared so much about that as a little kid.
Oh, no, I guess they did that in Diablo 1 and 2 as well, didn't they do? I'm not sure.
I wasn't too much of a Diablo guy.
I never got into Diablo. Yeah. I did. Well, that's not true. I did Diablo 1 super hardcore, like a lot.
Okay.
I was so into that. But then I just realized I was enjoying StarCraft multiplayer so much more. It was so much more rewarding.
Yeah.
And then I messed around with Warcraft 3. Me and my brother thought that was going to be like the next big game we were going to be into. But and not that it was bad, but I think we were expecting an extension of StarCraft.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, Warcraft 2 and StarCraft 1 are pretty similar.
Okay.
They're just these economy games. You don't have heroes. You're not really leveling up. There's some of that in the single player, but not in multiplayer. And then I think we were both thrown off a little bit by the pacing and fighting neutral units and stuff like that. But now that I'm a lot older, I especially appreciate it. But you know, I first casted Warcraft 3 when I came out here, right?
I didn't know that until recently. I think you actually said that on the podcast.
When I first got out here, I worked for a network called Arirang TV. It was not a fun place to work. People were not very motivated there.
Okay.
Like, everybody that worked there, it was like a job. It's basically a company that puts propaganda out for South Korea. They promote stuff that's happening in Korea. It shows up in a lot of networks in Asia.
Okay.
Like, if you go to the Philippines, I know when I was in the Philippines, I turned on the TV and I was able to find that channel.
Okay. So it wasn't just like a gaming thing.
No. They were, usually it was promoting kimchi or Korean ice skating. But then, you know, eventually, one of the things that was getting, well, it was already big at the time, but they thought, okay, we can put some of these old Warcraft 3 and then later StarCraft games and put those in Korean on, and then they let me dub over it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, when is this? Like, what year?
It's 2019 now. This had to be... Wait a minute. Yeah, this had to be 2008.
Damn.
Yeah, dude.
And that's when you first came out to Korea?
Yeah. Okay. But initially I was casting Warcraft 3. They said there might be the opportunity to do StarCraft. So you know, I had to be able to do some Warcraft 3 is what they said. Because that's what they had to purchase the rights for.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, sure. I was not that good at Warcraft 3. I did not know that much. But for what they were looking for, it was super basic.
Right. They just wanted somebody to talk about the games. Like, casting wasn't as refined back then.
Yeah, I mean, there was no... they didn't even want me to go in-depth in strategy. It was like, okay, this is the hero unit.
Okay. Almost like you're casting for ESPN.
Yeah,
right?
Reach the
general audience. Stuff.
So then you were into Warcraft 3 for a while, but you didn't do it competitively, and you waited for StarCraft 2?
I didn't even know... this is actually, given the route that my life took, this is kind of ironic, and also I'm such a fucking dumbass. But I was never into like competitive RTS and StarCraft even. Like when I knew about it, I would think
you
about
mean StarCraft 1.
StarCraft 1, yeah. Like I'm still talking like when I'm a kid. I played Brood War, like I played the campaign. I did a little bit of multiplayer. I played on like Nintendo 64 against the AI and that kind of shit. And besides that, like, I thought of it as like, oh, like the fucking Koreans play that sport. Like, what a joke.
Oh, really?
Like, it was absurd to me as a little kid. And then, like, I fucking, like, the life route that I took was like, oh, shit, I'm doing this.
So when you knew about it, you thought it was, like, some lame thing that kids in Asia were doing, and that why would you bother doing that?
Yeah. It's, like, in retrospect, like it's such a stupid take to have. But I was like 12, 13 years old. Like, I vaguely knew about this kind of thing.
Well, then how old were you when StarCraft 2 came out?
I think it came out right after I graduated high school. So I think I was 18.
Okay. You didn't go to college, right?
I went to community college for a little bit.
How long were you in community college for?
I started taking community college classes when I was in high school. I think like junior year of high school.
Oh, you're doing AP classes or something like that?
I took some AP classes in high school, but honestly, like I had such a bad high school experience. Like there's a lot of family shit going on, and like I was like depressed. And
well, my let's talk about high school. I fucking hated high school, dude.
Yeah.
It's so weird now that I'm an adult. real. I mean, now that I truly know how much nothing in high school mattered at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you go back to your high school self and you think of just how important everything seemed.
Right.
At the time.
I think like if I were to go back to high school with some more perspective on life or just, not even the experience that I have, like the personality that I have now, it would have been fine. I would have had a good time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But just like, there was just so much
If we went back
shit.
To high school, we would have dominated, man.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true
we
for could have
made
everybody.
A great teen movie, man, where he disguises ourselves as high schoolers and go back.
But like, there's like puberty and like everyone's got, like family drama and shit like that. And like, you're trying to figure out like who you are and what you want to do. And
Were you in private high school or public
no,
high school?
No, public high school.
Public high school. Yeah. I went to all boy Catholic, tuck your shirt in, high school, man. It was
just I'm struggling to imagine you. In that kind of scene, because like I imagine like Little Nick, and Little Nick is like counterculture kind of,
it was punk. A punk rock Nick. Yeah. That all came on going to Catholic school, man.
Yeah, it's suppressed.
Me rebelling against all that.
Yeah.
I mean school sucks. I know that you have to go. I guess I don't even know if you really have to go to school. It's one of the weird things. I guess you have to be somewhere while your parents are working.
No, like school's like, I don't have like a hot take on school. Like school's good. High school's good.
School's good. Yeah. Do you regret not graduating from college or spending a long time in school?
I don't think that I would have. I'm happy with the route that my life took. If I can go back, I still wouldn't continue college. I probably would have quit sooner.
Yeah.
You know, I don't regret not pursuing any educational career path.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things about when you're really young is a lot of people tell you that you can't become educated unless you went to school.
Yeah.
And everything that I've learned now that I'm not in school and I'm just working in the real world is it's like that's not the case at all. You can
I think it depends on what kind of field you want to go into.
Yeah.
Like for us, like it's esports. Like you're not going to really get a lot of general knowledge that'll assist you with this in school, you know? Like maybe if you go into like public broadcasting or if you go into like public relations or business, but I mean, it only applies in a very kind of general roundabout sense. Whereas, like, if you want to be, like, a computer scientist, if you want to be a software engineer, like, school can be pretty good if you don't want to be completely self-taught.
Maybe I should rephrase what I'm saying. Because, like, for instance, right now I'm technically in school. I'm back studying Korean again, right?
Yeah.
I'm not against
But that's not, like, college.
Learning.
Though.
Yeah, that,
count.
What I was trying to get at was college.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
University.
Yeah.
Because you can always take classes on something.
Right.
And it's never too late to do that for, as far as I could tell, almost anything.
Yeah. Probably next year when things settle down a little bit for me, I'm probably going to start taking Korean classes out here again, too. So
it's good, man.
Yeah.
You didn't study directly that much, right? You just
dated? I took yeah, basically. I took I took one class at EY University, which is a women's.
Yeah, that's the all girls university. That's.
But.
Not far so from. I used to live right by there.
Yeah. You used to live in Shinchon, which is where I live now.
Yeah.
But I am not a woman. I was able to get into the school because they don't have a gender restriction for their like their Korean language program. Like if you like go as your
so
if you're
were
a Korean,
the only guy in all girls school.
Kind of like there were some other guys that were doing this because like it's just like it's actually they have a really good language school. Like I think like Yonsei University focuses a little bit more on like grammar and writing, and EY is more about speaking. And
okay.
Like being functional in like day-to-day life. And that's what I needed. But I took that class and that was like 3 years ago. And I'm pretty sure like I just like fucking like failed it. Like I did not pass the class. But the thing is,
a lot of people bomb out of those.
Yeah. It was the
Even
one
though
class,
they come out speaking Korean, which is very weird.
It was the one class that I took and I bombed it. And then after that, I started dating. And I think probably what was problematic for me was I had lived in Korea for like 4 or 5 years when I first took that class. And so I had a pretty good general knowledge in terms of like day-to-day life.
Right.
So when I did the interview with the teacher to kind of like get placed, we just did it all in Korean and it was completely fine, but it was for me really easy conversational topics.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's me introducing myself, saying that like where I'm from, why I came to Korea, why I'm going to school. It's really easy shit.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, you're good at Korean. We'll place you in like level 3. And then I got into the class. And there's like, I didn't know any of the vocabulary.
Yeah.
There were so much like grammar constructs because it's very different from having a conversation. Like being conversational in Korean is not the same as being book smart in Korean. Like I had better conversational Korean than my classmates, but they did so much better in the class than me.
Yeah.
So after I started dating, I was able to start applying some of the grammar and vocabulary that I learned in the class. And so it's almost like it was like a preliminary part to just like getting into a Korean circle of friends, because I started dating, and then I started, at the time I dated a girl that didn't really speak any English. And then I became friends with all of her friends who didn't speak any English.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like this little stage of osmosis where I was just like hanging out with these people. We would go to like picnics on like the Hangang on the river out here in Seoul. And I would just listen. Like I was just like that guy. Like, yeah. I would like contribute very little to the conversation.
Yeah, but you were just kind of picking it up. And
yeah, I was listening. Like I was very focused, like more than I would be like if I was actually engaging. I was just like trying to break everything down.
Yeah,
like somebody
would
say something, I'd like pull it up on my phone, like go in like the English dictionary, and like I would try and type it in, that kind of shit. I'd be like, hey, how do you spell this?
This is funny talking about this now because I find your Korean to be totally functional out here.
Oh yeah, my Korean is so much better now than it used to be.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, like dating non-English speakers will kind of do that for you. Like,
yeah, you could force into that role. That's how Wolf got good, man.
it's
Wolf was just dating around in Korea for a while, and you know, he wasn't letting the language get in his way, and eventually, and I think he's got a special brain for it. I think you have this too, where you're able to wrap your head around language better than some people.
I thought that maybe, but the thing is, like, I took the equivalent of four or five years of Spanish. Like,
oh no! I did this
college
with French in school. I don't speak any French.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. No, I have no idea what happened in those language courses in school when I was. But I don't know that I was at all interested in learning that language when I was in the States.
I was interested in learning Spanish because when I was in high school, I think almost every single one of my friends was Hispanic. Because I'm from California, and I just got with that friend group. And so, like, I would go to my friends' houses and stuff, and like first generation immigrants.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
Like my best friend was this Hispanic guy. His parents were from Mexico, and they didn't really speak any English. So I would go and like I would try my broken fucking Spanish with them. And we try to have these like little cute conversations, that kind of thing. And so like there was a motivation there where it's like, oh, like I'm socializing with people that speak this as like their primary language, but it just didn't click with me. I think like I just wasn't developed enough.
Yeah, but I guess if you're in. You're actually in a country where everybody's speaking one language that's not your own. Then you're much more forced to do that, where there could be more novelty in learning Spanish.
Right. Actually, I didn't keep up with that friend after I went to Korea, and I ran into him a number of years later when I was visiting California again.
Yeah.
And I went to go see his parents, and like this was a high school friend, so it had been like 4 or 5 years since I had seen him. And I was trying to talk with his mom in a little bit of Spanish, and not only had my Spanish gotten worse, but she was making fun of me because I had an Asian accent whenever I tried to speak Spanish. Because my brain defaulted to like, oh, like try to pronounce things in like the non-English way, which is the Korean way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I would just have like a thick Korean accent trying to speak like very basic Spanish. And it's just like the most absurd thing is like this white kid from California trying to speak Spanish. He has like this Asian accent. Like, what is going on?
So when you first moved to Korea, then you had obviously no Korean language ability.
None
at
whatsoever.
All, right? This is the same for me. I when I was hired to come out here, it was like I had, I think, a week to decide.
Yeah.
And so I just bought my ticket and just came out here. And it was similar situations for you as well?
I came out here in 2012. I was on a North American gaming team called Quantic. And I had made it my goal to go to Korea for a while because the scene was just so much more competitive out here.
Yeah.
It's kind of, there's almost been like a shift in this where like now European Zergs are very competitive. Like
right.
They can compete with the Koreans better than any other foreigner has in the history of StarCraft 2.
Yeah. Of like all even, StarCraft, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you go back to like Jinro and Idra and Huck and like the old days of like the GSL and like MLG. And I think maybe, I guess I should qualify this because now I'm thinking about it. Huck did win. He won like a Home Story Cup and a DreamHack and an MLG back to back to back. And there are all these Koreans competing in those events. But with that exception, foreigners have never been better at StarCraft 2.
Right.
And Huck doing that was amazing because foreigners in general were terrible compared to the Koreans in the early days of StarCraft 2.
He was on OGS?
He was on, I think he trained at the OGS house, but was on Liquid and then EG.
Okay.
Quantic had the same thing with StarTale.
Right.
Where, we partnered with StarTale. But I wanted to go to Korea for a long time. And
Wait, how old were you when you first came out here?
2012. I think I was 19. I think
Damn,
the day
young.
That I think to qualify that, I think I was 19 and it was the day before my 20th birthday.
Okay.
Because I came here on, I remember very vividly because I came here on September 23rd, 2012. And I came here with Illusion, who was my teammate, because we had both qualified for the first ever World Championship Series. We're both going to represent America in WCS, which was a little bit different in structure there. It was a lot more national. So like every tournament, like we did our qualifiers at MLG, basically. Like every tournament had their own little national, or every country had their own little national tournaments. So we qualified. We were among three or four representatives from the United States. And we went there to train. So I flew out with Illusion. And I remember I was so sad because it's like September 23rd. It's the day before my birthday. I flew out. I got to the Star Hotel house. I knew none of the players. I spoke no Korean. I was just like, I'm just not going to tell anybody it's my birthday. I can't handle like the social thing. Like arriving in Korea, not knowing anybody. And then just
you were too shy to tell them it was your birthday?
I wasn't particularly shy back then, but it was just like...
Did you feel like it was just like
it's
too
like,
much
hi,
to bring
I'm
up?
I'm here
and this is my
also,
birthday.
Also, it's my birthday. Let's talk. Yeah. Okay. It's just like... Like, if I were to go back and do it again, like, I would be like, fuck
Koreans,
it. Let's
Koreans
just,
are pretty
party.
Good about birthday celebrations.
Yeah, but it was just, it's a very big change. Like, I had never been outside of the North America at that point
in
my life.
Oh, so was this your first time abroad ever?
I had gone to, like, Mexico, like, across the border, like Tijuana, that kind of thing.
Okay.
But, like, that doesn't really count.
Right, doesn't count. Yeah.
That's, like, a day trip kind of thing.
Right,
like, we were in L.A. or San Diego. I was like, oh, let's go to Mexico. Went to Mexico, came back same day.
Right.
So, it was my first trip abroad, and, I grew up in like a single family household and we were poor as shit. It's like we never ate out. Like we never had like ethnic cuisine of anything. My mom would just like make spaghetti and macaroni and cheese.
Okay, yeah.
And shit like this. So it was my first time eating Asian food, really. I had never eaten with chopsticks before. So it was very, it was a big
This
shift
is the thing
for me.
A lot of pro gamers have to deal with when they come out here is chopsticks.
Yeah.
And the food. And then occasionally the diarrhea they get from the food because their bodies aren't used to it.
Well, I feel like that's just a general thing. Like, not the diarrhea specifically, but just, like, every time that I try, like, the first time I went to Europe, I got, like, a light cold. First time I came to Asia, like, there's many pathogens.
It's certainly not a knock on Korean cuisines. I love Korean food. But, yeah, if you're not used to a certain type of diet, your body can react very poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a really big difference for me.
So you come out. You are in this team house. Are you the only foreigner at the time?
I was there with Illusion, but Illusion was a Korean American, so like he could speak some Korean, you know.
Right.
But
I know that when Artosis moved out here, because he came out here under very different circumstances, he was assigned to live in the Istro team house, which was a big StarCraft 1 team. They also had at times the best Counter-Strike 1.6 team.
Okay.
In the world, based off some tournament results. Like, they won WCG, I think, twice.
So, Artosis coming out kind of like an Idris situation, where he was coming out as like his pro to train and compete?
No, he was coming out here to work. I think it was in the journalism department, but he had ulterior motives to be a pro.
Okay.
So, a lot of people come out here as pros and end up working in esports.
He did the opposite.
He was trying to do the opposite. So, he was running Ascension, which was an online league that he was casting. At the time, I was doing commentary. I picked up for WCG USA Finals, did that, went to Singapore, and I was kind of picking up random gigs. And so when I got flown out here, I flew myself out here to work with Arirang TV initially. Mm-hmm. I was just the guy that had the resume of doing live stuff, and I was going to be dubbing over live events.
Right.
At the same time, Dan had been doing this online casting, and he was hired for... I can't remember the larger parent company's name, but he was hired. I think it was IEG. Yeah, IEG was the name of the company. They owned Istro. I believe later on they acquired what is now SpoTV.
Okay. So did Dan came out here after you then?
Yeah, he was a little bit after me.
Okay.
Because I remember very specifically when he flew in, and I remember thinking, "Oh my God, Artosis is in Korea."
Wow.
Because at the time...
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Like, everybody, like, knew everybody back then. Because it's, like, StarCraft 1, right?
Yeah. And there would be periods where Rotterdam was randomly in Korea.
Wait, you knew Ronnie back then, too?
Yeah, because...
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, because I would see him at events. Like, there would be a Warcraft 3 event.
Because you were
casting
there
would be StarCraft there, and StarCraft is always, like, the leper.
Oh, I see.
Compared to Warcraft 3. Todd, I knew back then. He'd be in Korea. I'd hang out with him from time to time.
Yeah.
Apollo came out for a while. He actually lived with me the second time he came out to Korea.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because I know all of you.
We had always teased Apollo because he played Command & Conquer, which we just kind of didn't even consider to be a game.
Okay, I played the shit out of Command & Conquer. Oh, that's still my favorite RTS franchise.
I love the game and I love the single player, but you know, we'd always joke about the multiplayer and stuff.
It was broken.
So Dan came out here. He was on this team house in Eastro. It was under pretty shitty living conditions, to be honest.
I mean, it's a team house, right?
Yeah. Some of these team houses were less than glorious. Do you want to talk about that? Why don't you go?
There's not too much to say. I guess the two big team house stories that are coming to mind is the first time I came out to Korea with Delusion. So we're at the Stars Hill House, which I can't remember exactly where it was in the city, but it wasn't in Seoul. It was kind of like in the boonies out here. And
it's much cheaper to get a place in Incheon. That's near the airport where you fly in if you're coming into Seoul.
Most of the StarCraft 2 pro gaming houses were in Incheon. Mm-hmm. They're actually kind of in the same area. But that's a whole different story altogether. When I came out to the StarTale house, Illusion and I had never been to Korea before, and we were a little unfamiliar with the mosquito thing. Like, there are
so many mosquitoes out here.
And September's like peak mosquito season. So we came in, and we were given our own little room. So there's like two bunk beds in the room that we're just splitting these two beds. And we left the window open because it's September and it's hot and humid as fuck. It gets so hot in Korea. And so like even just having a draft made things so much better. So like we had a fan and we had the window open in this tiny fucking room. And we had so many mosquito bites because the window didn't have a screen. And I can't believe nobody told us this. But after 3 days, we both got sick from the mosquito bites. I vividly remember counting from my head to my shins. I didn't make it to my feet because I stopped counting at 60. Literally 60 mosquito bites. That's not an exaggeration. Literally 60. So we both got really sick from the mosquitoes. When we got the mosquito spray, which was like the second or third day, because we're struggling with this in this tiny fucking room, we opened the door and sprayed the mosquito spray, like half a fucking can, sprayed it for like a full minute and just closed the door and just came back 15 minutes later. And we were just picking mosquitoes off the ground.
Like more than a dozen.
There were just so many mosquitoes. So that was my first experience.
Even having one mosquito in a room, if you can't find it at night, you're trying to sleep.
It drives me fucking crazy. Nightmare. Yeah.
When like you get close to your ear and it goes like, and then you smack your face, but you didn't kill it.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I've smacked my ears so many times, like half asleep, like not even realizing what I'm doing.
Oh my God.
But I have like this, like...
Well, did they do anything about it? Did the coach help you?
Did you tell them? We told the coach after like the first or the second day. The first day, it's like, oh, this is just life in Korea. Everyone has mosquito bites. It was like inexperienced, like stupid shit. Yeah. And then the second day, it's like, okay. I talked to the StarTale coach. I'm like, coach, I'm getting fucked up here, man. Like, can you help us out? Like, what's going on? And we just kept the window closed after that. Always had mosquito spray. I fucking sprayed it like every like couple times a day. It was just like, it was terrible. And the second like esport house experience was a number of years later, because I was only at the StarTale house for about 3 months.
Yeah,
because I came in September. I was training for the World Championship Series, which was in December. And Parting won that. Parting was on StarTale at the time. I remember Parting was really skinny back then. He's still kind of skinny now.
Isn't he really skinny right now?
He was like anemic back then. Like he was very, very thin. If like you go back and watch like 2012 Parting VODs, he was so skinny. And I never saw him eat. He was just a machine. He was the first person up practicing every day. And he was like the last person to go to sleep. All he did was play StarCraft. He wouldn't really eat and he wouldn't really sleep. Like, it's not a surprise he fucking won the world championship that year. He was a machine. But I was always so stressed about it.
Oh, that he wasn't just like, sleeping?
He just didn't seem healthy. So, like, every morning I would go to the little convenience store. Because, like, you're at a team house. Like, I don't have any expenses. I had a salary from Quantic, which was, like, I think it was...
And just for some perspective, your convenience stores are all... You can get to a convenience store anywhere in Korea in about a minute
from where
you are.
They're literally convenient.
Similar to Japan, people basically live out of convenience stores here.
Yeah, so I would... And I didn't like Korean food the first time I came out here. Because it was, again, like kind of a culture shock kind of thing. So I'd go to a convenience store and I would just get like snacks. And I would get these little tiny cartons of milk, like that you would get like a school box lunch kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of those early days in Star Tail, I noticed that like parting like strawberry milk. He got himself a strawberry milk. And so like every day I would be like one of the first people up. Parting would always be practicing, but I'd be up at like 10 or 11 a.m. go to the convenience store, get a little snack, come back, and I would always give him a little strawberry milk. Every morning, keep I would give Parting his little strawberry milk. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like, there was a little bit of that. And then after he won the world championship, it was $100,000, I think, for first place. I'm like, you can buy your own fucking strawberry milk. I never bought him shit after that, man. But those were fucking good times, man, because I was out there when Life won a GSL too. Like, Life won, yeah, and Parting won. Like back-to-back tournaments, we were living like fucking kings, man, because Parting was buying everybody dinner and then Life was buying everybody dinner. It was,
yeah,
it was fucking fantastic. But yeah, yeah, that side of the life was pretty nice. But I was only there for 3 months and then I went back to school.
Were you paid at all?
I was paid by Quantic, and this is like old esports money, so my salary was $500 a month.
Okay.
Yeah, not a lot.
No, not
a
lot.
That goes pretty far in Korea. Like,
I guess if you're not paying for housing and you're playing games all day, you could absolutely, yeah, live off $500.
Yeah, especially like a team house, like you're not paying for anything really. Like,
yeah, you don't pay rent, you don't pay utilities. You. Yeah, there's, yeah, food there.
Yeah, it's just like everything you wanted.
Right, right, right.
And then I went back to California. I did one more semester of college out there, and I was like, this shit sucks. So I reached out to him.
Oh, so you went back to college?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I mean, like, I was there. I remember it was December. It was like right after WCS, Quantic disbanded. I didn't have a team anymore. I didn't have a salary anymore.
Right.
We didn't have a team house anymore. I was only at Star Tail through Quantic, and I was only there to train for WCS. So the team bought my ticket back to California. I'm like, okay, well, shit. I guess the esports era of my life is over. Go back to school. So I went back to school. I did that for one semester, and I'm just like, this shit fucking sucks, man.
Yeah. So, dude, I just had... Do you ever have dreams that you're back at school? Because I just had a dream last night that I was trying to get back.
I still get them occasionally. Not that often. What was your dream?
I always, similar to you, like for me, you've only been back in Korea for a little while now.
Yeah.
I've been working on the podcast. But when I first got here, it was also a nightmare to get my visa
because
I didn't have a college degree.
Yeah.
And I basically dropped out to come here for work. And then I got here and they had not bothered to ask me if I had a degree. And you know, the whole thing was such a nightmare. And also, I think, because I went to school for a long time, I mean, I'm basically college educated.
Yeah.
Right? For whatever it's worth, I've gone through almost all of college. I have like a handful of classes left over. And I think there's something in my brain that because I never finished it, and it must be latent in my brain, because if you talk to me now,
yeah,
like as a person who's not in a dream state, I don't want to go back to school. I don't need to go back to school.
Yeah, I don't either.
I have a proper work visa here. I have the education that I need. If I had to get a degree, it would cost me a lot of money, just to pay for the semester, even if I were to take the extra classes and stuff. But I think there's something about unfinished business back in Denver where I went to school at Regis University. That
just like
occasionally
in
creeps
psyche
into my dreams where I'm back there trying to finish those classes. I was just wondering, do you have anything similar to that? Because I've talked to some other people who did not finish school and have similar experiences.
I still have like high school dreams. Nothing like college.
Really? Okay, you get high school dreams.
But the high school dreams, it's not like anything like weird like socially, which is like what you might expect from a high school dream.
Yeah.
It's like me forgetting like my homework for like AP World History or something. Or it's like getting ready for like a, oh, I had this one nightmare scenario where, God, this is like so fucking 2010. But
yeah.
I was like 17, 18 years old, senior year of high school, taking AP art history. And like 40% of our grade was over the course of the year, because it's a year long class, AP art history at my school. Over the course of the year, you're basically compiling a book where you take a couple art pieces from every era that you study and you basically, yeah, write about them. And so I was doing all of this digitally on my computer, and for whatever reason, I think it was what was that really old, like, not BitTorrent, like the music pirate website. No. Some
Napster.
Napster, yeah. My brother was always downloading shit from Napster.
Yeah.
The computer was fucking loaded with viruses.
Oh, yeah.
My mom took it to Geek Squad. Again, this is like so 2010. My mom took it
right
to...
after you guys went to Blockbuster. Like, how fucking old is this story?
My mom took it to Geek Squad. They fucking wiped the entire hard drive.
Oh, no.
Right before I had to turn this shit in. My grade dropped from like a C or a B to an F. My teacher was just like, I'll give you a D. Like, oh, I'm not going to fail you. I'll give you a D. Because I needed the credits to graduate high school. Like, my senior year of high school was such a shit show.
Really?
That's why I was taking community college classes. Was I was just like, well, fuck it. I don't give a shit about these high school classes. I'm just going to take community college classes because I could take shit like astronomy and psychology and physics. Like, it's so much more interesting.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
So I was failing high school classes, and I didn't give a shit about it because I can transfer the credits from community college.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care. So I get, but I still get nightmares about like, fuck, I lost the file. I have no, like, I lost all of this like year long fucking dozens of hours of just like composing this shit.
Oh,
so like,
that's
the, I get
so
I get dreams like that where it's like, oh, like I'm getting ready
so
for a final.
High school for me was a nightmare. It was terrible. I there was a period in high school I had a 1.9 GPA. Like, I was on the verge of being kicked out. And I just never did my homework.
I had the exact same thing.
And I don't know. It's weird because if I have to study something now or learn something, I can learn it fine. But there was something about school. Like, I couldn't bring myself to do the homework instead of, for instance, in this case, literally just playing StarCraft. I would play all night. I would sleep in class. I would sit in the back of the class. I'd sleep in class. And
yeah.
I never knew what was in my backpack.
Wait, what?
You know what I mean? I didn't know. I would get to class. I wouldn't know what fucking books were in there. Like, did I bring the right books to class? I wasn't paying attention, you know?
Yeah.
I was trying to get to the next class to sleep. I'm even surprised I got into university. I got in on an interview.
Damn.
I think. And my high school was a Jesuit high school, and it was a Jesuit college.
Yeah.
I think not a lot of people applied for it, so I got in there. But I kicked ass in college. I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, because my community college experience was pretty good. But high school was like a fucking shit show for me, man. From sophomore year on, I had like probably close to you, like 2.0, 2.5 GPA. Like, it was a shit show.
Yeah, it was just, it's so bad. I remember, like, I graduated high school, but I remember thinking, like, I'm so close to getting out. Like, my senior year, I'm like, I'm just so close to being done with this shit.
Yeah.
I never want to come back here.
Yeah. I was
nothing is worse than to me than high school, but I don't have any weird dreams about it anymore.
Yeah.
Even though I loved college, I loved going there because it was like, I don't know, everybody was nice in college. I was in a super sportsy bro jock atmosphere in high school.
You were in a 4-year, right? Like, you didn't go to community college.
I was in 4-year college. Yeah.
I was so demoralized from how badly I fell off at high school. I didn't apply to a single college. I didn't even try.
Wow.
I was like, I'm just going to fail. Like, I'm just going to go to community college. There's no way I'm going to like accomplish any of this shit.
So I got into this pretty good school. Again, Regis University in Colorado. And I thought I was just going to be fucking up there. And then I realized, oh, I actually really am enjoying this.
I got
in trouble my first year. I had really low grades. And then I just realized, okay, I need to figure out my major.
What did you end up majoring in?
Philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah, minor in psychology. But I think also I realized there were classes I didn't have to go to as much to pass. And I could go talk to the professors, and they talked to me like an adult. And there was kind of less of an authoritarian vibe that I think that's what really turned me off in high school.
Yeah.
I don't function well in those environments.
Yeah. High school teachers especially can be like really hit or miss. Like, some of them are definitely there just to like get a paycheck. They don't
you know,
do
what's
shit.
Funny is the longer you live out in Korea and meet more teachers, people are teaching kids out here because there's a large expat population out here teaching. You just realize, oh, these are just young people that have the same shit going on that everybody else does. And some of them hate kids.
Some of them really
some of them hate school.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are trying to figure out what they want to do. And, you know, they.
My high school biology teacher, I want to say at least half of the classes. By no exaggeration, he just played episodes of CSI.
Really?
And we just had open book quizzes.
Those are the best classes, though.
I didn't learn shit. I can't believe he had his job. Like, this must have, like, other teachers must have, like, the faculty must have known. Like, he gave no fucks.
Yeah.
Like, it was the most ridiculous shit.
I mean,
but when you're in school,
what
a class.
But when you're in school at that age, that's like the best. That's like the best thing that can happen.
That was the one class I got an A in sophomore year.
Yeah, yeah. I had something like that in a biology class my freshman year where he actually just showed us a lot of documentaries. Frankly, it was probably better to do that than to, you know, try to plow through this book. Or, yeah. You know, documentary is just more stimulating as it is. So you went back to school.
Uh-huh.
And you just, did you just quit and go back into gaming or what happened there?
Yeah, so like 2012, 2013, I went back to school. I did it for a semester and I was like, this is just, I wasn't interested in the classes I was taking.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working out. And I was like, you know what? Korea was fucking dope. I want to go back out there. And I was friends with Blitz Dota, who was a pro gamer at the time. Now he's a commentator, I believe. I don't really follow Dota too much anymore. But he was training at the Foyu House when they had a Dota 2 pro gaming team. Foyu was like an old school like StarCraft 2 esports team. And I was like, hey man, like I want to come out to Korea. Like, can you hook me up? Like, get me in contact with the people at Foyu. I think it was Choya.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so I talked to them. And they're like, yeah, you can come out. And they're, but it's like 2012, 2013. Like teams don't have money. They're like, could you like pay a little bit? And I was like, okay. Like, how much do you want? And they wanted $500 a month. So that includes rent, food, everything. And I was like, I can pay that out of my own pocket.
You had money saved, or?
Yeah, I had enough money for that. So I mean, like $500 a month is not a lot. And I had made some money off like streaming and that kind of shit too. So I went to the Foyu House. Foyu disbanded a little bit after that, and I went to the Prime House. And I remember Prime was in a really nice building. And in the same building that OGS was out at, the same building that Foyu was at. A lot of teams were in this building. It's in Incheon, or like Bucheon.
Just to jump in here for a second, for people listening, like 85% of the land area in South Korea is uninhabitable. So everything is urban. Almost everybody's experience is urban.
Yeah.
In Korea. Yeah. So whenever you're trying to get a team house, first of all, it's hard to find an area that has enough rooms, you know, to house a dozen people. I want to make that clear because I can imagine we might have some Europeans or Americans listening to this that
Everybody's in the same building. What the fuck? Yeah.
Well, it just, you know, it could be hard to picture.
Yeah.
Asian megacity life, if you haven't experienced that.
Yeah, this building was so crazy. You could, there were four apartment towers that all went up to like the 16th or 20th floor or something. And then the whole center block up to the 7th floor was basically like a mega mall. You could literally live your life in this building. There were grocery stores. You can get your hair cut. You can go to the doctor. Like, it's like, you could.
I think Artosis' building is like that.
The subway station. With his family. The subway station's in the basement of this building.
Yeah.
It's like literally like you can just live your life in this building. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So I was at the Prime House and they had like this really nice apartment on, I think it was like the 16th floor. And it's supposed to be like the ultimate pad. Like it's supposed to be like a really fucking luxurious apartment. But they just converted it to like a fraternity house because like it's a team house, you know? Like,
right.
So there's one main bedroom, the master bedroom, which would be for like those grand apartments where all the pro gamers live. And then there's like these smaller side rooms where like the coaches and shit would live. And so we had like fucking a dozen pro gamers all in this master bedroom. And this is a very large bedroom. And when I went in, it was all bunk beds. But there were no mattresses.
What do you mean there was no mattresses?
So there were the chassis for a bunk bed. Just like the wooden structure of a bunk bed, but no mattress. So there were a lot of those, okay. And there were no mattresses. So I came in. I spoke no Korean at the point. And I was talking to the head coach, Gerard. I was like, when is this going to get fixed? Like, where are the mattresses? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it like fucking like his English wasn't that good. I obviously can't speak any Korean. So there's a miscommunication. He's like, oh, it'll be sorted like in a day. I was like, oh, okay. So in my head, I'm like, oh, they're just like ordering all new mattresses.
Right. That's what I would assume too. Yeah.
In a day, what happened was, all of the wooden bunk bed things were thrown out. So they were tearing everything down.
Getting rid of the bunk beds?
Yeah. I have no idea why.
Where did you sleep that night?
Everyone slept on the floor. The entire time I was in the Prime House, everybody slept on the floor.
Okay.
So it's just like a dozen.
Pillows and blankets? Or?
It's just like literally on the floor. It's very traditional Korean. I did this for a month and I was like, I can't fucking stand it anymore. Like my back is hurting shit.
I tried this a couple times when I was there, sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
No.
We would, everyone has a pillow.
Occasionally, I will sleep on the floor. I'll sleep on this living room floor here if I'm really having back problems.
Uh-huh.
But after that, I want a firm mattress. Also, if you don't have a bed, you can't even have sex. That's a fucking nightmare.
Well, I mean, we're in a team house. Nobody's
no, you guys weren't banging. I get it. But I've been to people's houses in Korea, and they don't have a bed. They just sleep on the floor, and I can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Your fucking knees would hurt.
Yeah.
And anyway, so yeah, fucking ghetto ass shit, man. That was like one of the main, one of the first culture shock things. Like I thought I had gotten everything out of the way. Where it's like my first stint in Star Tale. It's like I saw my first traditional. I don't know if traditional is the right word. Like the old school Korean Asian bathroom where it's just like a hole, a ceramic hole in the ground.
Oh, you mean a squatter?
Yeah, the squatters. Like this is as an American, I was like, what the fuck is this?
I tried to use a squatter my first week out here.
Yeah,
and it's a very odd thing because. First of all, a healthy human should be able to squat. I now can squat. I can hold my body in squatting position.
Uh-huh.
But if you grow up just sitting on toilets and in chairs, you realize you can't squat.
It's very...
There's some cultures that squat. A lot of Russian culture.
Slav squat.
People can squat. Yeah. You'll see guys in Adidas squatting and smoking
cigarettes.
But for instance, an American is unlikely to be able to squat. So the first time I tried to squat... And shit in a hole.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing it. My knees were kind of shaking.
Yeah, it's just weird.
And I wasn't pointed right, and I pissed into my jeans. Because I don't know about you, but if I'm pooping, I'm also going to be peeing. But I peed into my fucking... And I went, oh, no. And, I'm wobbling. And then I turn around. After I'm done wiping and I realize that there's a fucking log next to the hole because I missed the fucking hole.
My God,
to wrap my hands in toilet paper and fucking
I never had
interact
that.
With my poop and push it into the hole because what if somebody is waiting outside and has to use it after
me? You're
more
courteous than the most public bathroom users. That's a fucking nightmare.
I've talked to people who actually enjoy the squatters. Now they've been out here for a while.
I've heard that it's supposed to be healthier.
You can actually...
It's just a more natural way to fucking pass a shit.
Yeah, that's how people are supposed to be shitting. Apparently you can buy little... I don't know what you call this.
Footrests.
Yeah, footrests where you can prop yourself up.
Yeah.
So you're almost in squatting position, but you're still on the toilet.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I interrupted you with that story. you were talking about trying to use a squatter.
Yeah. All I was going to say is this is probably one of the last real culture shock moments I had in Korea was just we're just all sleeping on the ground. Like, what the fuck? After a month of it, I splurged and I spent $150 on this little tiny inch and a half thick mini mattress thing because I just couldn't handle it anymore. It was awful.
I suppose if you grow up sleeping on the floor, your body's just used to that.
Yeah, like I said, it's really traditional. It's not something that's
people. Who are listening to this should assume it's not a hazing thing or some kind of
all of us. Yeah. Marine King, I think Marine King splurged and also got himself a little tiny pad.
Nice.
that was an experience. So I came back to Prime and after about so we're talking about how we got a little sidetracked, but after school coming back to Korea and resuming pro gaming, after I trained with Prime for about a month. I was playing all the internal ranking games. It's like, well, you're staying here. You're practicing with us. You might as well play the ranking games.
Can you say what internal, explain to the people what an internal ranking game is?
At the time, Prime was competing in StarCraft II Pro League, which I believe the format was, it was 4 1v1s. So it would be if Prime was matching up against SKT, it would be Marine King versus Rain or some shit. And then so-and-so against so-and-so, so-and-so against so-and-so. And there's a... fifth match if it's a tie, which is the tiebreaker. And so people play internal ranking games in team houses, which is basically this is the map pool for this week of Pro League. Everyone's going to do a round robin and play 3 or 5 games against everybody else. So this will be a day or multiple days. We're just doing these internal ranking games and everyone's keeping track of it.
It's basically an internal ladder.
Yeah, it's a tournament basically. It's a round robin tournament to determine who is most capable of competing in Pro League. And after I joined, I don't know if they weren't expecting this, but after I joined, I actually did really well in the internal rankings. At the time, Prime was struggling quite a bit. It was the bottom placing Pro League team.
They were basically the lowest tier out of what was maybe 9 teams at the time.
But Marine King was really good. Maru was on this team, but he was very undeveloped and unrefined as a player. Maru is now arguably the best StarCraft II player of all time. A lot of people believe that. But at the time, he was, God, he was so young. He must have been like 14 or 15. Like, he's still very young.
I think he might have been younger than that even.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't really remember, but yeah, he was still developing. So even though like the roster of Prime was quite good on paper, it just didn't deliver in the Pro League format. And after about a month of the internal rankings, I remember we were putting our shoes on to go get dinner. And again, like, I've only been in Korea for, in total, maybe like 9 months. Like the 3 months at StarTail, then the time at FOU and the time at Prime. So I don't speak any Korean. And like, I'm trying to get by with like the Korean pros. Like, we're speaking like really broken English. But like the coach Gerard, for example, like, he didn't really speak English. So there's a lot of miscommunication. And we're putting our shoes on to go get dinner. And Gerard's trying to explain to me. He's like, I asked him when I should pay next. And he's like, oh, no, it's okay. I'm like, what do you mean it's okay? He's like, no, like, you're Prime now. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, this is how informal it's happening? He's like, no, like, you're Prime. I'm like, I'm on the team. He's like, yeah. I'm like, wait, just to clarify, like, to make sure I'm understanding properly. Like,
yeah.
I'm on the team now. He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. It was like the most nonchalant shit. We're putting our shoes on to go get dinner. Like, there was no like press release. Like, it's like the most like fucking, he's like, you don't have to pay anymore. Like, you're doing well in the internal rankings. Like, you're just on the team.
So through those internal rankings, you basically fought your way into permanent status on the team.
Yeah. So it was the most head scratching moment for me where it's like, wait, what the fuck? Cause I wasn't even expecting
it. Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm like, maybe if I like do well enough, like I can make it on the roster. So I got on Prime. I was just like, okay, like no press release for anything. I went on Twitter. I'm like, guess I'm on Prime now, guys. Yeah. It's like the most ghetto shit, you know? Because like, especially back then, like Korean teams had no idea how to market themselves or interact with like a foreign audience.
Oh, they were really bad about that.
Yeah. Actually. So there was like that. I can't remember the website, but there's like the same Korean news website that always has like
StarCraft 2 Pro League. Or
yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that was it. So they had like the Korean press release for me joining the team, and like that was it.
And then how long were you on Prime for?
It was about a year, maybe a little bit less than a year. And then after that, I was trying to transition from being a pro gamer into being a streamer because streaming is just much more reliable income. So after that, I went through a transitionary period where I stayed at the Axiom House, which was Total Biscuit and Jenna's team. I stayed with them for about 3 months, and then the Axiom House shut down. And in a span of like a year and a half, I was at the FOU House and the Prime House and the Axiom House, and every single one basically shut down. It's like, oh, fuck. It's a very dark time in StarCraft 2 history.
Yeah, a lot of those enterprises were not doing well.
Yeah, but by that point, I had established myself enough that I could just get a place and start streaming, and that's basically what I did until like 2016, 2017.
What was it like transitioning from being a professional gamer to being a streamer? Or what did it even feel like, a transition?
There was a transition, but it felt really easy. Like the training schedule at Prime, for example. So it's going to sound extreme, but keep in mind there are breaks. I can't remember when the breaks are, but we practiced 6 days a week. And I believe practice officially started at 11 a.m. and ended at 1 a.m. 6 days a week. So yeah. We would start practice at 11 a.m. I think we would play for 2 hours. We would have a 1 hour break for lunch. And that would be like 1 p.m. ish. We would play until 5 or 6 p.m. and then we would have dinner. And then most days we would do some kind of like team exercise. Like we'd go play like badminton or soccer, like team building kind of thing. And oh my God, I remember at the time I needed prescription glasses, but I was broke and like I didn't want to spend money on glasses. And being an American, I thought it would be a couple hundred bucks. It's actually really cheap to get glasses out here.
Yeah, it's very affordable.
But we would play soccer, and my vision is so poor that if somebody's more than 25 or like 50 feet away, I probably can't tell them apart if they're wearing like similar clothing. So like, we'd be playing soccer, and like people would like be calling for me to pass to them, and like we're not doing like team like shirts or no shirts. Like there's no organization. So like people would just be like fucking with me. So like fucking like Marine came like stay pass. I would pass it to him, and it's like, oh fuck, he's not on my team. So there's a lot of shit like that would happen. And then after that, we'd wind down, have a little bit of free time. A lot of the pro gamers would go to like exercise at the gym and that kind of thing. And then from like 8 or 9 p.m. until 1 a.m., we would continue practicing. So it was a really rigorous schedule because you were expected to practice past 1 a.m. If you just did 11 to 1, the coach would be unhappy.
This is a big thing in Korean culture. It happens a lot in offices as well, where you're kind of supposed to, generally the rule is you're not supposed to leave the office till your boss has left.
Yeah.
You can leave, but it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Japanese offices as well.
Right.
And so the idea is that you're supposed to be showing that you... It's a weird thing because I think they're even trying to make some laws in Korea to make it not as much of a thing.
It's counterproductive.
It's counterproductive, yeah.
Like people it's
acting like you care, but you know, yeah. You're not really doing anything.
People are more productive when they're healthy and they're happy, and working 50 to 60 hours a week does not make a person healthy or happy, or by extension productive. It's just, it's archaic.
Noni in StarCraft 1 had similar problems.
Was he also training at a pro house?
He was in Eastro.
Okay.
And he's just somebody who, I guess, sleeps more than normal.
I'm one of those people, too.
He was happy to wake up at a specific time, but he wanted to go to bed earlier, and there was some pressure from the coaches. And he just thought, what the fuck, man? This is, like, so obvious. I need to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, if I sleep more, I'm going to play better.
And I had the same problem at Prime because like practice would officially end at 1. Most people would stop playing at 2. Yeah. And we have to be at our computers practicing at 11. Like people would be pissed if you were not practicing. Like the coach would be very upset. So usually up at 10 or 10:30 because you got to eat before
right.
You do that. I think like breakfast started at 10. And like I said, we're all sleeping in the same room and we're all sleeping on the floor. So like I would be getting to bed at like maybe 2:30, 3 a.m. I'm sleeping on the floor and other people are still practicing. And like people are just coming in and out of the room all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it was the lowest quality sleep I had in my entire life because I'm sleeping on this floor. I'm at most getting 6 or 7 hours a night and I'm constantly being woken up by people getting up to go to the bathroom. You can hear the computers because like the bedroom is, there's a thin wall between the bedroom and the main practice room.
You were probably in an old building as well, which wasn't as soundproofed, right?
I think it actually was a pretty modern building, but like, come on, like fucking like four programmers. If like everybody else is sleeping, but still like four programmers, like on their fucking like mechanical keyboards at 300 APM, fucking like, Hashima! Like playing fucking like cursing out their opponents and shit. It's a mess. So the schedule was really rigorous. I remember one of the first months that I was on the team, I had a date in Seoul on a Sunday. Sunday was our off day.
Yeah.
And I figured, like, it's a Sunday. Like, fucking, I need a Sabbath, man. Like, I need a break, right? And so, like, I went on this date, and I probably left at, like, maybe noon to go to Seoul, and I spent some time in Seoul, and I went on this date, and I came back at maybe, like, 10 or 11 p.m., and the coach was, like, furious with me. He's like, where were you all today? I was like, oh, like, I was in Seoul. I had a date. He's like, why do you have a date? I was like, well, it's like Sunday. Like, it's our free time. He's like, you should be practicing. I was like, we're not on schedule today, man. Like, and that was the last time I ever went on a date in a fucking Korean programming house. I never took another Sunday off after that.
This seems to be almost like a the early days of Korean programming houses. And I'm talking like StarCraft 1 early days.
So we're talking like 2000, like early 2000s?
Early 2000s, okay. Yeah. Mirrored a lot of what K-pop, not team houses, what the fuck do you call this? Like these K-pop groups where they're trying to get a K-pop.
I don't know dance shit about this.
So a lot of these people are under the same rigorous standards where they have to practice dancing all day. They don't go to school. They're encouraged or sometimes made not to date.
Okay, that makes sense.
And just shit quality of life.
Yeah,
you know. I think it's also why there's a high suicide rate among some. Yeah. K-pop stars, as you know, they get into this for so long. I think a lot of the StarCraft 1 team houses mirrored some of this. You know, they had kind of picked up from that model and brought it over. And I think especially in the early days of StarCraft 2, it was like that. And not in all houses necessarily, but some. It sounds like the one you were in was similar to that.
Yeah. I feel like most pro houses were like this. But going back to the transition from being like a programmer to a streamer, because my practice schedule was so rigorous, training for StarCraft 2 Pro League, going into a consistent streaming schedule was really easy. Like I was streaming, I think my schedule was a Monday to Saturday, so 6 days a week, just like at Prime. And I think I did it from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 9 hours a day, 6 days a week, 60 hours a week, which on paper sounds like it's fucking crazy. It's a long time to be streaming, but relatively, that was pretty fucking easy compared to what I was doing at the Prime House, you know? And I was doing it at home and it was less pressure. I did a lot of I think I was probably the only StarCraft II streamer at the time that would get more viewers when they weren't playing games, because I would go on break and I would pivot my webcam and I would cook fucking sandwiches and shit, or make Korean.
You saw this back in the day, man.
I would make Korean barbecue and that kind of shit. My viewership would go up whenever I went on my fucking breaks, because I would just be cooking food. It was really chill. And I did that for, I want to say, about a year where I was streaming. And the time that I wrapped it up, which was, I think, timeline's a little hazy. I think it was December 2016 or 2017, one of those years.
Out of curiosity, since you've lived both worlds, just as a hypothetical, if you were to be a competitive player right now, do you feel like you need to be on a team, or do you think that you could do it just as a streamer? And before you answer, the reason why I'm asking is that there's so much talk about this on forums, Korean forums and non-Korean forums, about were team houses good, are these necessary? And a lot of the best StarCraft 1 pro gamers, and I'm using StarCraft 1 in this case because it's going to make sense by the end of my example.
Okay.
These guys were all on these rigorous pro teams, basically identical to what you were doing. But now there are no StarCraft 1 team houses. All these guys stream on Afrika TV, and a decent amount of them make enough money that they are just streamers, like what you were doing.
Yeah.
So these players have lived both worlds, where they were consistently making a living in the two and still playing at the highest level. What is your view? Do you need to be on a team house? Do you need to have been on a team house to then stream full time and be a pro gamer, or does it matter? What's your take?
So I think the StarCraft 1 example is interesting. I'm not going to tackle it from the financial perspective, because that's a whole other beast in and of itself. If you're not going to make it as a streamer, you're probably just not going to be able to.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to use StarCraft 1, Flash and stuff, because he makes a living
streaming,
where a lot of people, it's a grind, and they don't make enough.
Yeah. I guess I can speak to me personally. I definitely was more financially successful streaming, but that's just because I didn't accomplish much as a pro gamer in terms of earnings. I didn't make a lot of money. As far as practice goes, I think StarCraft 1, going back to this, there aren't really any, there's no team houses for StarCraft 1, right? That's just not a thing anymore. So the playing field is just even.
Well, I think it's also that, from what I understand, they don't want to be on a team house.
Yeah, but also we're talking about people that are now in their mid to late 20s, a lot of them.
Early 30s.
Early 30s.
Mid 30s.
So these are people with lives, with relationships.
They don't want to live in a house with a bunch of guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, from a competitive standpoint, I think team houses are so much better than training on your own. I don't think it probably doesn't work for everybody. I'm sure it varies from person to person, but I would say, by and large, if you want to excel as a pro gamer, being in a team house is the best way to do it. There's something about sitting side by side with all of these top players and being able to watch their games in real time and see how they handle things in real time and discuss with them in real time and get instant feedback like that. That's just almost impossible to do in any other medium.
That's true. It is. It is an online game, but proximity seems to be everything.
Proximity is huge.
When I first came out here, I was mostly just casting Warcraft 3 and trying to get into StarCraft 1. Just going out to dinner with people who are playing made such a big difference in my ability to play on my own, and just having some feedback or being able to queue up and
being able to talk about it,
meet up for a beer afterwards and talk about the game was huge.
I would actually posit that the reason why Koreans primarily are not as, they don't have as much of an advantage over foreigners anymore, is the lack of team houses. I think that's probably the reason, because the playing field is even again. Imagine if, hypothetically, if there was a StarCraft 1 team house where, I don't really know StarCraft 1 programmers that well, but imagine, Flash and Rain and all these other top pros are training in this team house, half the population, maybe a dozen players.
What they do often now is they just all queue up a game together in the same stream and rotate and talk. I don't know if that counts as the same thing, though, or if that's more of a way that they're all kind of helping each other make money by streaming together, because there seems to be a more collective streaming strategy
Right.
For StarCraft 1 for everybody to kind of make money off each other. Uh-huh. They have matches that people pay money into, like show matches that you know, the person wins the prize. Then they stream that online. And also, Afrika TV has a different business model than Twitch in that Afrika TV doesn't ban restreaming.
Oh.
So, yeah. Huh. This is something that people, I think nobody knows about because is the people that watch Twitch just are not, even people at Twitch don't seem to be aware of this. But
so what, you can just like, just completely straight re-upload
somebody's
stream. You
can open up somebody else's stream.
It's not like, it's not like YouTube where you have to transform the content by like adding your own commentary or take on it.
Well, no, you just like,
you can literally just stream somebody else's stream.
You open up somebody else's stream and you can even be there in their stream watching. People are watching you watch something else.
Huh.
And you can talk. A lot of ASL and its success, and its numbers are very good, is like, for instance, Flash can open up his stream while it's going on and give his own thoughts and commentary.
Huh.
Nobody's blocked from doing that.
I see.
Which, it seems to have worked well for Afrika TV, is just there is no... the best content is made to win, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, and also people get introduced to other streams through this way. I know, right. Twitch has hosting and stuff like that, yeah. But this is a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, that definitely seems like a good structure. Definitely for a community like StarCraft 1, which I guess comparatively, at least in Korea, like it's bigger than StarCraft 2, isn't it?
So StarCraft 1, StarCraft 2 player base are about the same size. StarCraft 2's viewership is much more non-Korean, although there are Korean, obviously a lot of Korean players and a lot of Korean viewers, but the StarCraft overseas viewership is much larger than the Korean viewership. StarCraft 1's viewership is overall bigger than StarCraft 2's viewership when it's a major tournament.
Okay.
I mean, it depends.
That actually surprises
WCS Global
me.
Finals. Yeah. ASL's done very well.
Like relative to GSL TV. Out here. Like counting both international and domestic streams?
I mean, ASL at times has been bigger than Overwatch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm a StarCraft 2 guy, so right. I don't follow like StarCraft 1 tournaments very well.
Right. But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. The point is that they're both big. They both have a lot of players. The StarCraft 1 player base is almost exclusively Korean, though.
I see. Oh. Well, it makes sense that the StarCraft 1 streamers would then try to.
They're busy leveraging the power of Korean streaming out here.
And court, like, nobody's in team houses. I'm sure they still like the community element. Like, the programmers are looking out for each other. Yeah, it makes sense. But going back to the point that I was making regarding team houses, is I feel like, hypothetically, just assuming that was not the case, hypothetically, if you had half of the programmers still training in the team house and the other half is streaming all the time, I guarantee you the team house pros are just going to crush them. Like, I really do believe that's the primary reason why Koreans dropped off in StarCraft 2 is because the team houses just aren't really
I mean, unless you're on Jhin Air Green Wings.
Yeah.
Right? Or you're in Jake's team house.
Yeah.
Regrets team house. I mean, those are basically the two, right?
Yeah.
Question for you. Are you interested in talking about then leaving Korea after being a streamer, going to the Bay Area, working out there?
Yeah.
Before you then came back to Korea now?
Yeah. So just to rewind a little bit, because when we talked about transitioning from a full-time pro in terms of competition to full-time streaming, it was easy from a scheduling standpoint. It was a lot much more forgiving as a streamer than it was as a pro. But it was much more exhausting for me because I felt like I had to be entertaining for 10 plus hours a day. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of people don't realize that about streaming, is it's not just playing a game. You really do have to be engaged and you have to almost play a certain way at times.
It fatigued the hell out of me. So I did that for about a year, and I saved some money. And that was when after I finished that, I was like, I'm gonna take a break. That was when I started taking Korean classes. And that's when I started making more Korean friends and just trying to expand my life out here outside of StarCraft 2, because until that point, most of my friends were still foreigners. They're still non-Koreans. And I felt like I had been here for so long, but I hadn't fully integrated. Like, my friend circles were still just so disconnected from what is actually Korea, the actual people and the actual culture, and the language and all of that. So I did that for about a year, but my savings were not good enough to just kind of continued coasting, and I didn't really have any form of income. So one of my former contacts from StarCraft II, one of the old investors of Quantic, was interested in starting a small business back in California. And we had kept in touch throughout the years, and he reached out to me because he was wondering whether I would be interested in learning a new trade and starting to work with him. And, I mean, the company didn't work out. We gave it a good shot, but what's the statistic? Like 80 or 90% of startups like fail within the first year.
I've worked on so many little companies before.
Yeah.
That never amounted to anything.
Yeah. So it was a very positive experience. It was one of the best experiences of my life. It was very tough because, again, it's like startup culture. Like, we were working an incredible amount of hours, but the company ultimately didn't work out. So I did that for about a year. And then after about halfway through the year, I realized, okay, future prospects of the company aren't that great. Revenue streams aren't growing at the rate they need to. There's a lot of overhead costs in the startup, and we weren't going to get funding. So I started thinking about what my next step was going to be. And I decided I probably wanted to come back to Korea because, honestly, like, I'm from California. I was working back in Silicon Valley. That life just doesn't mesh with me, man. Like, Silicon Valley is
hard for a lot
of
people working in Silicon Valley.
I made so many new friends back there, and I would have the same conversation with all of them at some point where it's, why are you here living in Silicon Valley? Because nobody that I met there was from Silicon Valley. Everybody came in, and everybody was there for the money. There's no other reason to go to Silicon Valley except for the money, for the industry, for the job prospects. And that does not make for a good life. There is nothing to do.
Yeah, that's you're just around people that are there to try to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Oftentimes in a very, very quick fashion.
Yeah. So it's just
Silicon Valley, Las Vegas,
Los Angeles to some extent.
Los Angeles. I mean, these are all places with specific industries around them. That you tend to have a lot of a certain type of person.
Right.
There, because day nine, my brother lives in Oakland. But of course you're going in and out of San Francisco. He's right by the bridge.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lot of friends that work in San Francisco, a lot of friends that work at Twitch.
Yeah.
And a lot of my buddies that I went to school with at university ended up living out there doing various jobs. But yeah, a lot of the people that you meet out there are kind of focused on one thing, and everything's too expensive. I think the real estate in San Francisco, I think there, London and Hong Kong is the most expensive places
I had a,
to live.
I had a 2-bedroom apartment. It was the cheapest one that me and my roommate could find. And I believe at the end of the month, our typical bills were like $3,000 for rent plus utilities for a very shitty, low-income, 2-bedroom apartment in Silicon Valley. $3,000 a month is a lot of money.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. So the lifestyle just didn't mesh with me. Like, people were there to make money, and that doesn't really make for fun social circles. Like, it's just, it's a very weird class of people, and I didn't enjoy it. So I wanted to come back to Korea, and I started working with my brother. My brother at the same time was, he wanted to do his own small business. He was doing construction, and my brother's much more of a handyman than I am. Like, he used to work in like auto body shops. He used to be a woodworker. Like, he's done all this shit. And so he was just doing shit like building and painting fences, for example, and gates, which it sounds like such menial labor. He will make $10,000 in a job.
Yeah.
For like these like high, like big house clients.
Well, that's, we were talking about school earlier and jobs, and there's jobs you can make a lot of money and you just don't need any degree at all.
Especially if the business is your own, like, if you're not, if you're not cutting it out. So I was doing this on the weekends, and I didn't have a car because I was trying to save money. So I was biking 10 miles a day, 5 miles to and from work, Monday to Friday. And then on the weekends, I would bike from my apartment to BART in Fremont, which is like an hour and a half. It's a very long bike ride. I would go to the East Bay area. I would work with my brother. I would go back to BART, bike back home. And so I was working 7 days a week, but I was able to save a lot of money despite all of the costs because I didn't have a car, was living really frugally, was cooking at home. Because like you said, everything's expensive. Like, if you go out, I'll go out for like a sushi dinner with a friend for lunch, and it'll be like $40 or $50.
Oh, yeah, easily.
It's fucking ridiculous. So yeah, I was able to save a lot of money and then come back to Korea and been hanging out since then. Looking forward to taking classes again next year. So
it's good to have you back, man.
It's good to be back.
I was really surprised when you came back because I was with you on your last night before.
Oh yeah, that was
you
sad.
Went back. Yeah, I thought I was like goodbye, and you got me that cutting board.
Uh huh. I made that.
Yeah. It was like cutting board, but it had chess pieces on it. We still play chess on that sometimes. It's a cutting board that has the checkered.
It's effectively a chessboard.
Of a chessboard, yes. But yeah, man, you're back, and now we're hanging out. We're working on this podcast. So you feel like Korea is more home for you than the States in general?
I came here when I was 19, and I'm like 26, 27 now, something like that. Like, my adult life has basically been spent here. So, yeah. I mean, besides this, like, what do I have? Like, back in Silicon Valley, like, it just doesn't feel like home. And like the East Bay area, like it's so rural and there's nothing to do. Like I can't really think of wanting to spend time anywhere else.
So if you could give a future pro gamer, because you really lived the life, if you give a future pro gamer advice, what would you say? Because you've competed around the world. I think occasionally you downplay your ability, but you were a very talented pro gamer. You've traveled, you've lived in Korea in team houses.
Yeah.
You've taken that skill and turned that into a streaming career for some time. If somebody was looking to step into this, what would you tell them?
I haven't really thought of that before. The two things that I would probably say is number one, to focus on your mental health. Because when I was a pro gamer, I put a lot of stress on myself. And I felt like, specifically in tournaments, I always underperformed drastically compared to practice. I never did as well. There was a certain level of anxiety because there's so much pressure to do well. If you don't succeed as a competitive pro gamer in a tournament setting, you don't have a livelihood unless you're salaried. And so there's this huge pressure on anybody that's trying to make it. And if you can't deal with that in a healthy way, it's going to drag you down. I know it certainly dragged me down. And in the same sense, I think finding a good work-life balance is also necessary. Like, we talked a little bit about unhealthy work schedules in Korea, like people working 10 hours a day and how that's unhealthy and unproductive.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like you need to do that grind as a pro gamer. Maybe not to that extent, but there absolutely has to be a grind. So
work hard, but take care of yourself.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It's kind of tough, especially given how much the game has changed from when I was a pro gamer until now. Like, I don't really know what it would be like for a prospective pro gamer of whatever game to try and break into their scene today. I can't really relate to it because for me, it was just so organic and grassroots. I competed in online tournaments and somebody was like, oh, you're good. Like, you want to represent us for $300 a month? Sure. Like, that's how it started.
Now here you are living in Seoul.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say just work hard and focus on your mental health.
What are you doing for Christmas?
Probably spending Christmas Eve with a girlfriend. Christmas Day, I'm not going to... That's just another day to me. Like, I don't have family out here, man. I'm not going to do shit.
Sometimes taking a holiday alone can be the best, though.
Yeah.
I had one Christmas break in college where everybody in my entire dorm went home, I think, except maybe one other person in the dorm, and me. And I just had a whole little Christmas break just to myself. I was totally alone.
Sounds nice.
It was nice, man. I go on little walks and go to the convenience store, get some food, come home, watch a movie, play StarCraft.
Yeah, Chuseok Korean Thanksgiving was like that for me, too. Because like all the Korean pros at team houses, everybody leaves. Just at the
team
house
alone.
When
Seoul empties out and everybody goes and sees family on Korean Thanksgiving.
How about you? You're going to Thailand.
I'm going to Thailand. I'm going to be on an island.
It's going to
go
be
with
fun.
My girlfriend and some friends. It should be pretty cool.
Definitely more interesting than my Christmas plan.
I've done Christmases in Seoul, but this time around, I have no work this month, so I thought,
yeah, might as well.
I might as well get out, and you know, the trip's going to be pretty cheap, anyways.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, man.
No problem.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too.
And I guess we will be going to the after show now.
Okay.
For Patreon supporters only. Only for Patreon supporters. That's all for this show. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. I hope you guys have a really nice holiday. You get to relax, whether you're with family or friends. You're just taking some time off to chill out and hang out. I hope you guys are also going to have a great New Year's coming up here as well. Be sure to be good to each other. As we always say, please support us on patreon.com/tastelesspodcast. We are going to be upgrading the show to video very soon. That's going to cost us a little bit more. So if you appreciate what you're hearing here and want to support us, it really does go a long way, even if it's just a little bit. This podcast was produced by our superstar, State, also known as Ryan. I'll see you guys again soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Special thanks to our top Patreon supporters, Seth Rohit Sambadi, Charlie Cheever, John Kernicki, and Tyler Tebow Baggins Rodsack.